Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to TM Veterans Radio. Today is October 3rd. Hope everybody's having a great week so far. Tonight's show, we're actually going to be, it's going to be part two of AMVET's discussion on transitioning veterans. Last week, it was just an absolute fantastic show, so we ended up going into and asking if everybody wanted to get together and do another show, which we did. Last night's show basically opened up a lot of doors that needed to be opened. AMVETS goes above and beyond for our veterans, and last night's show definitely proved that point. You know, it was a great honor that TM Veterans was asked to get into that discussion. So tonight's show is really going to be an eye-opener because it talks about some different things that just seems that some people are, they don't want to talk about, but we need to talk about them with our veterans. And believe me, the part two of our AMVETS discussion definitely hit some key topics. But at this time, I definitely want to ask everybody to definitely visit our website, you know, tmveterans.com. And we have so much information on there. Definitely go to the frequently asked questions. That really has some great information as far as, hey, I'm getting out of the military. What do I do? You know, definitely resumes. One thing that we do is we do a lot of mentorships. We can be reached via our website at the contact. Just fill out what you want to hear. If you have questions, anything that we can do to help, we're definitely here. Then also, there's definitely a page called Companies Seeking Veterans. On that page, there's just some absolutely fantastic companies that want to hire veterans because they know the dedication, the leadership, the drive. There's just so many things that veterans bring to the table. So definitely visit our Companies Seeking Veterans. You can actually click on their logo. It takes you straight to their website. You can learn about them. And then also, I definitely want to ask everybody to visit our TM Veterans Radio page that has former shows, past shows, uploaded, which are really, really good because one thing that we do that I truly feel that sets us apart is anybody can look at a job description and say, hey, this looks interesting, but when you hear the actual company talk, their leadership, you can hear the excitement, you can hear the drive, you can hear, you know, why they want to hire veterans. You know, there's a really good interview with Nick Strembu. His name is Tom. He is a veteran and just a lot of fun to talk with. Great company. They want to hire veterans. So definitely check that out because, you know, the TM Veterans Radio is broadcasted worldwide for our military members, you know, our veterans and our communities. You know, the information that is broadcast on TM Veterans Radio shows, you know, pertains to information that is vital to not only our veterans, but also to our veterans' families and their communities. So topics related to veterans who are serving our military or community, you know, transitioning from the military, obstacles that are faced, you know, company management, what companies look for, you know, resume advice, and there's just so many other topics that are just fantastic that we really go above and beyond, I truly feel, to match that perfect position, you know, to what you're getting out. You know, one of the biggest things that we're going to talk about tonight on our, you know, part two, well, actually there's multiple topics. There's going to be some doors that are opened that honestly needed to be open. I think we say it's a can of worms that's open, but it's definitely doors that need to be open. But there's also going to be a guest on tonight's show that you know, is just an absolute true inspiration. I have not met him face to face, but you know, I've talked to him, and he is just absolutely amazing. His story, and you know, once a veteran, always a veteran. I truly believe in that. And you know, that tonight is just going to be an eye-opener for a lot of people. So without further ado, I want to go into last night's show, which is part two with TM Veterans and AMVET's discussion on transitioning military veterans. So sit back, enjoy, and here is last night's show.
Well, let me go ahead and let's go ahead and get this discussion started. I want to first bring on our, I think he's going to be a very integral part of this conversation. We had him on last week, and he is with TM Veterans. He is the founder of TM Veterans, Carol Davidson. Carol, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Perry. How's everybody doing?
I want to thank you for taking the time to join us tonight, and looking forward to. I did some research, and I've got some actual questions that I think are very valuable to the conversation. So rest assured, you just sit back and do what you do best. Okay.
Okay.
Hold on a second. Don't go anywhere now. I also want to bring on the AMVET's National Chief Strategy Officer, Sherman Gilliams. Let me get him on.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Sherman, how you doing, sir? You doing all right?
I am, and thank you for that kind tribute to Ms. Ferdy. She'll be missed, but it's always great to just talk about the life's work that people like her put in to make not just AMVETS, but this world a better place. And I think she did that with her, you know, while battling, obviously, having a tough fight ahead of her. But we honor her service and we honor her memory, and we're going to carry forward in her name.
That's it. That's all we can do.
Yep.
I also want to bring on from AMVETS DC, he is the second vice commander, Mr. Orlando Herrera. Orlando, how you doing, sir?
All is good. All is good. How you doing?
I am wonderful. And we also have Antoine. I'm going to bring him on. We're going to have a full show tonight. Antoine, you there?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. So we've got Antoine. He's the first vice commander for AMVET DC. So we have got a packed show tonight. Let me just make sure Vanessa's still on, too. Vanessa, are you there, dear?
Still here, Perry. Still here.
Wonderful.
Message,
so we've
by
got
the way.
You've sent me a message, by the way. Let me see.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, yeah. You know, Vanessa. See. Good girl, Vanessa. Folks, we have to do our national anthem. Good job, Vanessa. Man, I was ready just to go forward, and that's why the Lord sent you here. So, folks, hold on 1 second. We're going to go ahead and do our national anthem, and we will get started with AMVET's radio show number 78, which is going to be called Transitioning Veterans.
Right.
welcome back to AmVets Radio, show number 78. First of all, I just want to say that this show has been brought to you by AmVets Georgia, AmVets Florida, AmVets California, AmVets Arkansas, AmVets Tennessee, AmVets Tennessee Post 45, AmVets Post 1776, the Elks Lodge 1944, Tri-Cities Military Affairs Council, Veterans Web Design, and, of course, Painter's Dream Productions. You know, one of the things that really intrigued me about last week's show was, you know, it can't be easy to transition from service life to civilian life. And I think what I wanted to start off with, without turning everyone's mic on, because I'm a little bit concerned about background noise, so if you happen to be on, I'm going to turn your mic back on, but mute your phone, and then once you've been asked a question, or if you have a question, then turn it back on and talk. But this will keep the volume down as far as noise is concerned. I know most shows don't like to have this many people on at the same time, but we're not most shows, so I really don't care about that. I just want to have everybody an opportunity to speak up, and I want to first bring on Sherman, because Sherman, I know with the HEAL team, you guys deal with a lot of situations that are probably similar to this. So the floor is yours, sir, when it comes to starting off our discussion about transitioning veterans.
Sure, Perry. You know, when the question of transition really depends on what triggered the transition process itself. For example, some service members are let out of the military because of a disability, which can really be tough because, you know, it's not a time you chose to leave, and your identity is turned upside down if you're forced to leave the military, especially if you have to leave with a disabling condition. And then there are other types of transition where you have a family, you've done your 20 or 20 plus years. It's also tough because you've worn that uniform for a long time. Your family has grown up around the military, and suddenly you're thrust back into what we consider normal society, and it's hard to find an identity that's parallel to what you were in the military. If you are an E9 or an E8, you're used to having that level of stature in your world around you. And when you go into the military or out of the military, and you find yourself looking for a job that's commensurate with your experience, that can be tough. So a lot goes into transition. We find that transition stress takes many different forms, so it really depends on the individual circumstances. It could be a divorce, for example, involved. There could be financial issues. There could be a lot of things. So it really is a matter of to the individuals, explain their situation, and being ready to customize the advocacy for those people when they reach out to us, and that's what makes the HEAL team different. We don't expect there to be a cookie-cutter approach to every problem. We just meet the veteran where he or she is and try to figure a way forward.
We had last week, we introduced Carol Davidson, who's been on our show multiple times, but he's got a website, which is tmveterans.com, that specializes in helping veterans transition into positions. He's got companies that are on his website that are looking for specific positions, and so he kind of transitions them. But, hey, Carol, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Barry.
One of the questions or thoughts that I had, because you see resumes with veterans that are transitioning, what would you say is probably – what's one of the biggest obstacles that you've seen within those resumes?
Well, there's several answers to that, Perry. Number one is I see a lot of veterans that undersell themselves. Alex and I had a real good conversation about that last week when we were talking about, you know, veterans underselling themselves. And I said the story about the staff sergeant that was a 11 Bravo and pretty much just cut and pasted, you know, the definition of 11 Bravo. And he had so much more knowledge. He was the training NCO. He was in the supply. He was actually S1, S3 shop. And so that's answer number one as far as a big obstacle. But number two, one of the things that I have seen as of late, and I think Sherman just hit kind of a little bit on the point, was that we have some soldiers that are getting out either on medical or, you know, whatever the reason is, and they're not going to the classes, to the TAP, which is the Transition Assistant Program, which shows our veterans or, you know, transitioning veterans how to write a resume, or they, let's just say they're skipping the class, something, you know, they're kind of bypassing that. And I'll give you a perfect example. I got a resume. I printed this off because I had a long talk with the person today. And of course, without saying names, you know, this person is getting out actually. And, you know, it's not by, how do I say it? You know, their choice. So, I don't go into detail on things like that, but it says experience and it's just three bullet points. It said security and it said 4-year security clearance in the U.S. Army. Then it goes down to communication. It says phone etiquette, face-to-face, thorough the Army would be the chain of command and leadership, and then so on and so on. So the resume was so, so simple. And what I mean by simple, it was just bullet points. And by the end of our conversation, we talked for probably over an hour and a half today. And this person actually was a training NCO, worked in the S3 shop, worked in the motor pool as far as paperwork. And with the resume, there was so much more that this person had to offer. And really talking to our transitioning veterans, our families of veterans that are seeking employment, and it's really, it really nails down to not underselling yourself. And what I explain is a resume is a piece of paper to get you into the door. And then, of course, you have to sell yourself and really make sure that it's what I like calling a marriage. Whenever you're being interviewed, you are actually interviewing that company just as much as they're interviewing you. So, you know, we go over questions. We do mock interviews. We basically do mentorship and really work on resumes. And, you know, I probably spent about 2.5 hours on this person's resume today just to update it to where, you know, we could send this to, you know, multiple positions that you know, TM Veterans works with. And, you know, just to name states that, you know, that we have openings for right now. And this is logistics. This is operations, professional drivers, trying to think, dispatch. There's multiple positions that we have, and you know they're in Ohio, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa, Illinois, Maine, Michigan, Montana, North Carolina, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Texas, Wisconsin, California, and that's just to name some. So to answer your question, there's kind of a twofold on that question, and you know number one is, underselling yourself, not putting the information down. Number two is not using the transition assistance program to really understand how important a resume is. And I'm not saying that it's you have to have just what I like calling a rocking resume, but it's something to get you into the door, you know, with a company and to understand that, you know, even though you have a veteran background, basically, they want to know what you did in the military, and you know, so we really do that mock interview and kind of help the veteran change the wording from, you know, military to civilian, because, you know, again, if we all talked on this on the show right now, and we talked about, you know, pull-up packs, changing you know, PMCS and you know, training room S1, S3 shop, things like that. All of us understand that. But if you never served in the military and you're an HR manager and you're doing an interview, you know, you lost them right there when you said S1 or S3 or, you know, something like that.
Antoine Orlando, plugging guys.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much.
Glad to be back.
Did you have any thoughts or comments about that?
Well, you know, the resume piece is something I can definitely attribute to. I've gone through several interviews that will reflect and not only helping, you know, me understand, because I've been in the military for about 2 years or more, so that's something that I personally as well as other that we work with, kind of understand where they've been and where challenges, and we constantly help other veterans realize their potential without having them undersell themselves, which is a common battle. So we definitely understand that.
Anybody can chime?
Hey, Perry, can I have add a thought? This is Sherman. Can you hear me, Perry? Are you on mute?
I'm pretty sure Perry Blatt muted himself.
I'm getting good at this.
No one's good. Y'all are on.
Okay, this is Sherman. I'm just going to add another thought to what's already been said. It's easy to underestimate just how much help veterans really need. I'll give you an example. I joined the Marine Corps at age 17. I got out after 12 years due to severe injury. I had never filled out a resume in that time. I had never sat for a job interview. I was a commissioned officer up for private. I've done a lot. But the simple act of putting together a resume of essentially bragging on your qualifications and experience for a job, that was tough. It was very tough to do because it was all over the place. You know, most service members do a whole lot in a short period of time. And so how you pack that down and make it succinct, that can be a tough process, especially if you've never gone through it. And the gentleman who talked about how veterans skip those TAP classes and the other programs set up to help transition, it's hard to understand its value when you've never had to appreciate its value. And like you said, once they're on the outside trying to figure it all out, it's almost too late. So, you know, that's one aspect of this whole thing that becomes an issue, especially with somebody who did an entire career from a very young age. They've probably never – they stood the promotion boards and they've done all kinds of other things. But the simple act of a job interview is really tough for somebody who hadn't had to go through that process to get a promotion or a new job, which happens a lot in the military. So how we deal with that will be very important for the folks on the outside who are helping veterans do better in the process of competing for a job.
Hey, Perry, this is Carol. Am I live?
Yeah, you're live, Carol.
Yeah. Okay. Sherman, I could not agree with you more on that, what you just said, because last week we actually talked about this, and when I got out of the military, I supposedly had a position, of all things, I wanted to be a firefighter. And I worked out with them, and basically, you know, everything was set up. I showed up that Monday. I got out on a Friday, showed up on Monday, and they said they were doing cutbacks, and I didn't have a job. And the first thing that came through my brain was that I'm going to go back in the Army. And I decided to, you know, no, I'm not. I'm going to, you know, just I've got to come up with a resume because, you know, when I went through TAP, they basically just signed off, checked, marked, and stamped, and I was out the door. So with that being said, I wrote, and I think my exact words were last week, was the absolute ugliest resume you've ever seen. And I actually busted open a Yellow Pages, and I sent out, I went to the post office, and I think I got like 100 stamps and sent out 100 letters with my resume to the HR managers. And I had a position within, you know, a couple of weeks. And, you know, I don't regret it at all. But, you know, a perfect example of something that you said is, you know, when we showed up, doesn't matter what branch, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, doesn't matter. Whenever you showed up to your next unit, you didn't have a resume that you had to go to the first sergeant and explain what you did at your past post or, you know, your past unit. And I think that's what, you know, one of the biggest obstacles that I see is, you know, they think that, and I say they, I'm talking about people that are transitioning, they think, well, you know, I'm an 11 Bravo or I'm 54 Bravo or you know, whatever the MOS is, that's all I know how to do. And that is, that's very far from reality because, again, you know, again, doesn't matter what branch, we do a lot of cross-training, we do a lot of, you know, leadership courses and things like that. And, you know, that there's so much in there as far as logistics and operations and things like that that people are missing. And that's why I always say that, you know, don't undersell yourself because perfect example, you know, I've got a sergeant major that I'm working with that is retired and he actually got an offer letter today And it was so funny because he was like, well, you're my NCOIC. You know, I'm listening to you. And, of course, he, you know, he outranks me. But it was just really funny that it was, you know, what it all boiled down to was veterans helping veterans. And that's something that that we take a lot of pride in is, you know, not only the mentorship, but, you know, helping with resumes and, you know, the mock interviews and different things like that.
Guys, I'm going to have to jump in here. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more that that is an absolute fact, that that's something that takes, you know, priority that we don't see a lot of these days. But, you know, I hate to be the devil's advocate, but, I mean, that's why Perry loves me so much. you know, I've seen with a lot of vets that they, you know, now the GI Bill should be and ideally is designed as a leg up for our nation's veterans that are transitioning out of service. But what one thing that you do see is a form of complacency with our transitioning service members who get out and are solely going to school because the GI Bill comes with a little bit of an extra stipend along with it every month for housing. And you'll see veterans with, you know, unrealistic expectations. They expect that once they get out, because they're a veteran, there are companies that want to hire them, so they won't have a problem finding a job. But they figure, I'm going to go to school, maybe 2 years, get an associate's degree, maybe, let's say, you know, some crazy thing like fine arts, you know, fine arts appreciation or something like that. You know, something that they're never going to use in their career field. But they do it just because it comes along with BAH. Do you see that as a problem that is stifling our veterans in transition?
Yes, I do. And, you know, one thing that you really hit the nail on the head is, you know, the GI Bill, you know, housing and basically we'll call it, you know, your food allowance and your tuition mm-hmm. and things like that. GI Bill is not going to pay as much as you think. And I say you, anybody thinks, you know, one of the things that I see a lot of is transitioning veterans using the GI Bill to obtain their Class A license. And this is for professional drivers. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I tell a lot of the veterans is that there's so many companies that will do the training free. You don't even have to spend mm-hmm. your GI Bill. So, you know, the GI Bill is there for, you know, however you want to spend it. If you want to spend it to go to, you know, professional driving school, great, do it. I mean, it's yours. You earned it. But to say that, and, you know, again, I'm a little bit up to speed on this, but, you know, post 9/11, you can actually pass the GI Bill down to your family members. I know there's stuff that's...
That's
you know,
only
that,
if you've served a certain amount of time. I believe it's
correct.
Over 10 years.
Correct. So, you know, if you served over 10 years and, you know, I would have loved to pass my GI Bill down to my son that is, you know, going to school for forensics. So, you know, my whole thing on the GI Bill is that, or what I see the most of is, you know, a lot of the transitioning soldiers using the GI Bill to obtain their Class A license. And instead of spending that GI Bill for that, there are so many companies that will train you free of charge and pay you while you're doing your training and, you know, give you all the seat time that you need. And, you know, the perfect example, we talked about, you know, personnel, homeless veterans last week a little bit, Alex. And, you know, I know one in particular that, you know, that I got basically, I'm going to say, you know, in touch with a great, great company. And they are actually have obtained their CDL license. You know, they're over the road right now. So they've got a place to stay in the truck. They're saving up so that they can call a certain place home. And it was really helping the homeless veteran where they didn't have to go and, you know, file for their GI Bill and, you know, basically spend it to obtain their Class A license. So, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that will train you and pay exceptionally well, you know, not only during your training, but even after your training is completed without using that GI Bill.
Sherman, I'd like to get some of your thoughts. I mean, Carol, what you brought up was absolutely amazing, and it's absolutely true. I mean, there are a lot of companies out there that will do that, but how do we change that mindset? And I mean, Sherman, I think that you'll be one of the great people to talk about this with, is how do you change that mindset to where people are utilizing the tools that are available to them in the most prudent manner?
Well, I think the thing is, as I mentioned earlier with our HEAL program, I don't think any two veterans are the same. I've counseled retiring lieutenant colonels that had 5-page resumes because they listed every single school that he attended. I've talked to sergeants who have, 6-7 deployments, and they put a lot of focus on those types of activities. But I think it's really about understanding who the veteran is and what the veteran wants to do. Somebody who has crashed fire rescue in the military may not want to do that when he or she is up. So it's really about one-on-one time and trying to understand that veteran's value and what will make that veteran happy. One thing I hated doing was throwing a bunch of jobs at a veteran just because the jobs were open and they seemed like a good fit. They didn't seem happy. It really does take time. There are creative ways to make yourself more competitive. If you've got a secret clearance or a higher clearance as you get out, that becomes a really hot item to emphasize on your resume for the Booz Allen Hamiltons and Deloitte and companies like that. So it's really up. I think Terry says it's a matchmaking process. It's a marriage. And if the veteran can be patient, maybe go to school, target the set of skills that he or she is trying to develop as a student, and think outside the box. I think coding is a big growing industry, and a lot of veterans have the G2, as we call it in the Marine Corps, to pick up on something like coding, even if they hadn't done that before. But look at hot industries. Look at industries that are growing, not just for veterans, but for the general public, because that's really the path forward. You got to be able to compete with the general public, not just other veterans. So I try to help veterans think really hard about what they're really good at and translate that maybe into another discipline or another occupation that veteran may not have thought about. And that's really an in-depth process that requires a lot of really understanding who the person is in front of you. Veterans who have issues with post-traumatic stress, that's something they have to overcome in the work setting. And so we have to think about jobs that are ideal. But there's one other piece that was valuable in a program I'd set up some years ago. We used to engage the employer on behalf of the veteran. We would talk to the employer about what that person wanted to hire or what type of people fit best in that particular job opportunity. So we were actually in between the employers and the veterans. We knew what the veterans' disabilities were. We knew what the employer can't ask about things like post-traumatic stress, but we can kind of go between and help facilitate a good rapport between the veteran who's got a lot to offer but may have some things that he needs to overcome and an employer who wants to hire veterans but may be gun-shy because of the mystery that some veterans present. So the program can do more of that, where they also educate employers on how to talk to veterans, how to engage veterans, why they're valuable to the workplace. In fact, there are a lot of employers that don't even know how many veterans have in their employees. And so if they pay attention to the veterans that are already there, you may be able to create an environment that's right before having these new veterans come in. So we do a lot of employer awareness as well. I think that's another important piece of any program that seeks to help transitioning veterans find careers.
Absolutely, and I firmly believe that there needs to be more employer education, but there's also I feel that we, as military service organizations, and I feel the military itself needs to put a little bit more emphasis on finding how it works when you're just seeing, we talked about last week, a lot of veterans getting out, not going through ACAP, falling through that crack because all they're looking for is a signature. You have a lot of veterans and service members who, decide that the GI Bill is going to be their way of surviving and providing for their family without the realistic expectation of what it actually costs to live outside the military. A lot of people see the BAH that comes along with it but they don't realize the consequences that BAH has. I mean, if you fail one or two classes, you may lose that. You may lose, you know, the ability to provide for your family that month, and then now you're in a downward spiral worrying, what am I going to do? And then you also have the veterans who, like we said, not all two veterans are the same. You may have a veteran with, you know, with a traumatic brain injury or PTSD that, you know, is looking for a job that may not be best suited for what they may be capable of at that moment. And I think that's one of the things that we need to re-educate ourselves as a military and how we're benefiting the soldiers before they get out, and educating ourselves. I say ourselves, but educating, you know, the instructors of these classes and the facilitators of these classes, as well as the service members that are coming through it. And, you know, I'm not paid enough to come up with solutions, but, you know, what could change at that level? How would we be able to move forward from that?
Well, one thought I have is by sort of a peer mentor process. When most service members go overseas, especially if they're a family, you could get a kind of a peer family that's already in the area to where you're going, and that family will help you adjust. I experienced this when I got stationed in Japan for 3 years. There was a family that helped ease the transition. I think that the DOD and the VA maybe can think through a plan with or is assigned if the veteran opts for that, or the service member opts to have that. But if a veteran, let's say they're leaving June, going back to Kansas, maybe the Department of Veterans Affairs at the state level or the federal state might set up a peer mentor process that somebody like me who's willing to sign up for something like that, if I find out that the family's coming to the Virginia area, I'd be happy to make a connection with those people and help figure out issues like housing, the best schools, where the jobs are hot. You know, I mean, I work in the D.C., Virginia area, so I talk to people all the time who are looking. UPS is a big hirer for veterans, and it's not just the UPS drivers. They have a lot of operations within that multinational corporation. So I always thought a peer mentor setup or some kind of program would be ideal, especially if the veteran's going to miss out on a whole lot of the ACAP or TAP classes. That might be one way to fill that gap.
I think that would be an amazing idea.
Is being looked at is sponsorship. And, you know, the Army had the same thing. You know, if you were going, say, from, you know, 2ID Korea, basically, at Camp Casey, and say you were going to Fort Stewart, Georgia, you know, you had a sponsor that would get in touch with you and start talking to you, start telling you about the area and everything else. So, you know, I couldn't agree with you more, basically, on a sponsorship. And I think everybody on this you know, show right now would have no problem with signing up to be a sponsor in their specific areas, you know, where they live. And, you know, that would just continue to grow, because it is a very, very difficult task. And a lot of people say, well, I'm just getting out of the military. You know, I only served, you know, 5 years. I still remember you know, the civilian life. But believe it or not, if you just, you sit there and you think back about when all of us were in the military, you know, look how much the military changed just in 5 years. And, you know, the civilian world probably changes at double the speed that the military changes at. So, you know, it's not the same civilian world that you were part of before you, you know, signed up and, you know, basically joined the military. So, you know, I agree. I think it was Sherman that said that as far as the sponsorship. And, you know, you have a lot of veterans that would not have one single problem with being a sponsor on something like that. And I think that that would help in a lot of other areas, not just specifically on, you know, the schools and, you know, the areas and things like that, but also that mentorship as far as, you know, if somebody's having a tough time, you know, or what position should I look at, and, you know, what companies are in the area, you know, just different things. I mean, I think it's a great idea.
Definitely. And
very quickly,
you know,
one of the things, I was really going to stay out of this conversation mostly, but as I was sitting here and I'm listening to you guys and I hear you guys talk to each other and encourage each other, one of the reasons why, Carol, I originally talked to you about coming on was that, you know, you go step by step with these veterans and you really help them. And I didn't, and what was amazing was what Sherman said about how he didn't have any experience on in writing a resume. And I thought to myself, you know, that's exactly, I mean, there are so many organizations out there that are doing so many things for veterans, but something as simple as giving them the confidence to be able to present themselves in an accurate manner so that they can get the job that they want, I think that's really
right.
Important. And I just got to tell you, the fact that you guys are plugging in and going back and forth, I know there's somebody who's listening right now who's unemployed, who's without hope, who probably feels very alone and feels like they can't, you know, and the bills are piling up and the kids are crying. I mean, the stress levels. And this is
right.
Actually why I wanted to have Antoine and Orlando on, because these two guys have been homeless. They've had some really just crappy things happening to them. And I think from their viewpoint and how and to know what it's like to feel like that and then to see, you know, how involved they are now and all the things that they're doing, I think is a great encouragement. So just know, guys, that whatever little or a lot you have to say does matter. Vanessa?
I'm here, Perry.
You sent me a message about a possible comment. Go ahead with that.
Right. I Alex and I were talking about this earlier, last week, how that volunteer activity can be incorporated in your resume and help to boost your resume. Let's say you have a veteran that they're an ambassador and they're volunteering, but they don't know how to translate all of the things that they have a passion about that they're already working at as volunteer to their resume to apply for a job.
You know, yeah, we definitely talked about that, and that was one of the big things. Like, and one thing that was one of the big things that helped me when I was creating the volunteer handbook for our post at Post 45 that hopefully Department of Indiana will pick up is we took our volunteer resume or volunteer titles and their job positions, and we gave it to these veterans who are doing these positions. One, because it helps motivate them and it gives them a purpose. They know exactly what they're doing. When instead of calling somebody a volunteer, you call them a homeless veteran outreach specialist. That is something that can directly translate into the civilian sector, and it is something that they know, this is what I'm doing. I'm outreaching to homeless veterans. And I got that idea when I was in the Army. I volunteered even when I was in the Army through Army Community Service, an Army Volunteer Corps. And I got the idea because when I volunteered with them, they gave me a job title. And I think that my first one I had was Administrative Support Specialist. And I helped with office paperwork and duties like that. But once you volunteer with ACS, once you leave that base, you get a resume from Army Community Service that you could print out that told you where you volunteered, what your position was, how long you did it for, what the duties and responsibilities of that position were, and you could translate it out. I'd love to see in the future the military adopt something like that, that once a veteran transitions out, it takes pretty much what's on your ERB or your enlisted record brief or your ORB for your officers, and it translates that into civilian lingo. And that once you get out, just as easy as it was to print off your ERB and ORB while in the service, you just log in, print it off, that as you're exiting, you can get something along those lines that translates your career into civilian speak and then just fill in the gaps just a little bit to where you have those minute details that may get overlooked by that job description. To where right now, when you look up and you print off the ERB, like Terry says, or I'm sorry, Carol said, it just tells you pretty much the textbook definition of an 11 bang bang or 11 or a 19 delta or, you know, whatever your MOS may be. It just prints off that specific definition. And that's something that I think would be beneficial, is to transition to a system where you know, okay, this is an 11 Bravo. We are going to use civilian lingo, a job description, and put that so you can print it off once you get out.
Add one thing to that, Alex. All of your extra duties. So, you know, if you were, again, you were the training NCO, or you worked in the three shop, or you worked in the one shop, or the motor pool, or whatever, you know, you just.
Because that goes
in.
On your ERB, too.
Correct. And so you can actually sit there and, you know, if you sat there and talked about your PT scores and your, you know, company averages and things like that, you know, it would translate. I'm just throwing something wild out there. It would translate to, you know, Excel knowledge, writing macros, basically, you know, having your formulas in there, you know, things like that. It would translate it. So could not agree more, because if you pull up 54 Bravo, you know, I'm just using that as an example, you know, nuclear, biological, chemical, you know, what can you do in the outside? Well, you know, that was my MOS, and I got into the transportation industry, and the transportation industry, I mean, has, it, like we said last week, it was so broad. And one thing that Sherman said, you know, earlier that I kind of smiled, but I had a first sergeant that really mentored me, and I guarantee I would not be who I am today without his, you know, mentorship and his leadership. But one thing he always asked me was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I would always laugh at him, and I'd say, you know, hey, Top, I said, you know, I don't want to grow up, so there's no reason to talk about it. And he would always laugh and say, okay. And I did not know what he was talking about until I already exited the military. And what he was trying to say was that there was life after the military, and you need to start planning for what you want to do. And just because, again, you're an 11B or a 54 or 19 kilo, you know, I don't care what the MOS is, even though you're one of, you know, that MOS does not mean that that is the specific job that you can have. And that's one of the mentorships that we sit there and we go down our checklist. And, you know, although I don't have every single MOS for every single branch and have it to where it's military terms translated to civilian terms, but really talking to, you know, to the veterans and, you know, what I like calling the mentorship, excuse me, and understanding what they did and, you know, kind of, you know, sprucing up the resume as far as, you know, understanding that, you know, you have operations experience, or you have logistics experience, you know, your computer experience, you know, your leadership experience, you know, that there's so much, and that's one thing that's so, I think, lost in the, how do I say it, lost in the shuffle in the military, is people think, okay, 11B, you're strictly 11B, but again, it doesn't matter what branch, everybody is cross-trained a lot. And what I mean by that is there's so many different things that we have done that, you know, should be on that resume. And again, changing it to civilian terminology is, you know, that is a challenge. I get it. I understand it. But, you know, I couldn't agree more with what Sherman said on several topics. But, you know, what First Sergeant always said to me is something that I say to a lot of the veterans is, you know, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, what do you mean? And, you know, you start talking about it and you really open their eyes to, you know, say an 11 Bravo or, you know, I don't know what the MOS is for an MP, but they think, well, law enforcement is the only thing. Well, if you want to go to law enforcement, that's great. Well, I'm sorry, 31 what?
Well, it's a 31 series. So MP, you have 31 Bravo, which is your military policeman. You have 31 Kilo, which is your K-9 handler. I think you have 31
gotcha.
Echo, which is like
but
corrections.
All of those... You know, it doesn't mean that you have to be a, you know, in law enforcement. So,
right.
You know, just could not agree more. And I mean, I think Perry's ultimate, you know, question, what he asked is a great one. And to, you know, not only the sponsorship, but also the military bases. And I deal with a lot of military bases and, you know, the majority of them are fantastic, but, you know, to really explain that civilian wording, because again, if Alex or Sherman, you know, never served, and all of a sudden, you know, either of you are interviewing me, and I start talking about, you know, pulling packs and arms room and, you know, training NCO and things like that, I lost you right there. You know, okay, well, you served in the Army, you know, congratulations, but what can you bring to this company? That's what they're looking for. And, you know, again, I think I heard the word marriage, and, you know, that's the other thing that we say all the time. It's got to be a marriage. I got to love you just as much as you love me. And, you know, when you're being interviewed during the mock interview that we do is, hey, I want to show you that, look, I'm interviewing you, but I want you to interview me back. So we help them with questions, you know, basically what's your benefits package? You know, do you have profit sharing? Is there a 401k? You know, what does a daily routine basically look like? So you get a better knowledge of what that company is, you know, bringing to the table. And if it's a good fit, again, one of the things that I see a lot of is, you know, soldiers that are deploying back that do not have a lot of time to go to the classes. And of course they get out and I hate to say it the way I'm going to say it, but they're lost. And what I mean by that is they just don't know which way to go. They don't know who to call. They don't know any, you know, I'm not going to say they don't know anything, but, you know, they never had the chance to go to that big job fair because they were deployed. And when they came back, they had 3 weeks and, you know, bam, they're out. So I think that there's a lot of things that we can do for our veterans. And, you know, it all starts with, you know, educating them, whether it's the resumes, whether it's the mentorship, whether it's the sponsorship. You know, there's just, in my personal opinion, there's so many things that we can do more for our veterans that are getting out than we are currently doing.
Exactly. And the scope goes way beyond that. And I'd like to bring Orlando back into the fold and Antoine after I mention this, because this speaks directly to something that happened with their transitions. You know, Orlando ended up homeless for over a decade and a half. And one of the things that we're seeing with our military is with their transition. Now, this goes beyond your resume. It goes beyond your vocational expertise. You're coming back from deployment, and you have all of these briefings. You have this reintegration brief. They do these screenings for mental health. And what I found is we're pretty much teaching our military to lie. We're teaching them to lie that they're okay, because you don't want to lose your military career because you say, you know what, I have been thinking about.
Just opened up a bag of worms.
I know.
No,
that was a big bag of worms right there, Alex.
It's a big bag of worms, but it needs to be talked about because you're teaching them to lie. You're teaching them to say, I don't want to lose my military career, so no, I'm not going to tell you about the 6 sleepless nights I've had last week. You know, I'm not going to tell you about how me and my wife are always fighting, how I'm waking up from nightmares and, you know, I'm afraid of what I'm going to do. I look at my wife and I have no feeling anymore. You know, I look at my kids and I'm losing my control. And we're teaching our military service members to lie about that because they don't want to lose their military career because it's taboo. It's not something that is accepted. It's a career killer in most military members' minds. And then when you finally do get help, you have somebody that goes to the doctor and says, I'm thinking about killing myself, help me. And what happens, you get institutionalized, usually for a period of 14 weeks. I don't know about you, but there's not a damn problem I've had in my head or in my mental health or even in my physical body that's been covered or even remotely addressed within 14 days. So you're teaching our military service members, once they're into the hospital, to lie just to get back out into the life, so they could start working on it. Because if you tell them, yeah, I've been here for 14 days and I'm still thinking about killing myself, they're never going to let you out. And then you have to ask, how long is okay to keep this service member in the, you know, under, you know, commitment? How long is enough?
you know, that's definitely a bag of worms right there that you opened. But
if I could chime in on this.
Carol, it'd be okay if Orlando chimed in on this real quick?
No, go ahead, Orlando, please.
Hold on, man. We got all the time. We got almost 40 minutes already, so we're good.
Well, you know, as Alex mentioned, yeah, I homeless, you know, actually 16 years I was homeless. But that wasn't directly after the military. It took some time after the military, but it was – you know, I came in 79, came out in 85. I was never told about, you know, anything about the GI Bill. I was, even though I knew they were taking money out of my check, but that was about it. I wasn't interviewed. I was just given a bunch of papers, and it was like, okay, sign here, sign here, sign here. Thank you very much. You know, peace, love you. You're gone. You know, and I, you know, once I got in 85, I had to figure out what to go ahead and do. And at one point, you know, like Alex said, I lied. I didn't even mention to a lot of the employers that I was in the military, because I was like, okay, how are they going to hire somebody that was just a grunt?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was, you know, I mean, yes, I worked in logistics, but that was in a warehouse going over, you know, SOPs. I mean, mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, well, I just won't say nothing about the military. Yeah, and it took about 10 years before I even decided to go ahead and start mentioning it, and it was sort of an afterthought. You know, and a lot of my buddies even went through the same thing, and it was like, you know, but the problem I had, though, was that here it is, after going through my trauma in 83 with the Beirut bombing, I didn't know how to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all these years go by, 3 marriages, 3 divorces, you know, all sorts of things that gone on with my kids. I didn't have a good relationship with them, and I wind up homeless. You know, and it was like, okay, how do I handle this? 3 times I've already, you know, I had attempted suicide in the last 17 years. You know, twice on my birthday, but it was like I just had to keep on going. I'm working on a doctorate right now, and all the money that I pay for school from undergrad till now has come from student loans. It hasn't come from the GI Bill, because I didn't know that I had lost it. You know, I only had 10 years after getting out of the service that I could go ahead and use it. I didn't find out until 3 years ago. So, you know, and a lot of veterans have gone through that, where they don't get, you know, a lot of information coming out. Now, granted, a lot of them that are coming out now are getting the information, but back when I got out, back in, you know, in the 80s and even into the 90s, a lot of veterans didn't get that information. And even those before me didn't get the information. You know, so and then when it comes down to, you know, getting help, you really don't want to let anybody know that you're going through all these changes, you know, in your life, you know, because then there's the stigma. Oh, well, you know, he's screwed up in the mind, or, you know, we can't hire him, you know, or he's going to be problematic. Yeah, I was problematic all the time, because you couldn't say certain things to me. You couldn't approach me a certain way. You know, I've had to learn how to deprogram myself, and it's not easy because I go through that every day. You know, I just had a death in my, you know, my family just last month. You know, a brother right behind me, 55 years old, he just passed. Generally, when somebody passes away, it takes me a long time to even grieve. We just had a memorial service for him last week, Tuesday. I broke down to the point that I was screaming at people to stop certain things. And I was shaking, which is something that I never, the last time I shook, I was in Beirut. So I knew it was going to be explosive. I had to figure out how to calm myself down. So it's, you know, it's a lot that I've been through, and, you know, I don't mind telling people now. You couldn't get me to talk about this years ago, but I don't mind talking about it now. You know, it's a lot. It's, you know, there are veterans that'll go ahead and they got this one problem. They got, you know, maybe a couple of problems here and there. No, I've had a multitude of problems. I mean, even to the point that there are people that don't even want to hire me, you know, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I go ahead and I do what I have to do every day to help out veterans get their lives in order, get themselves, you know, transitioned in, whether it's with their benefits, housing, whatever the case may be. At least I feel good. Would I like to have a paycheck? Oh, that'd be great. Would I like to go ahead and pay my bills? Absolutely. You know, I got to sort of beg Peter to pay Paul to, you know, let Carlos know that I'm going to give him an IOU. I mean, it's, you know, that's
pretty much what it is, but yeah. And I know a lot of veterans that go through that. They don't know what to do at the end of the day. They'd rather just stay homeless and see what they could go ahead and get. That way they don't have any bills to pay, and you know, and if their life ends, then so be it.
Now, Orlando, are you seeing a lot of veterans? Are you seeing a lot of veterans going through that that are have pretty much been conditioned to lie, whether it's through institutionalization, like with a mental hospital for PTSD or some form of trauma that they've suffered, that they've you've got
all
of these griefs.
I've spoken a lot.
And I think that has to come back to it because it's a quality of life issue. You know, you've gotten these veterans to a point where that's the out that they see, whether it be that they're transitioned out and they don't know how to handle it because they can't get a job, or they have PTSD,
right,
or they have trauma, or they have a disability that came along with the military. You know, we have conditioned our service members to a point to lie, whether it's, let's be honest, you know, I'm sure everybody on this show has said it, and, you know, I'm pretty sure there's statute of limitations, so we'll be good. You know, I'll be honest, this is real. I have stolen things from other units to benefit mine when I was in the Army, you know, whether it be a Humvee tire, whether it be a can of paint, but we don't call it stealing, do we? What do we call it?
Appropriating.
Appropriating or tactically acquiring.
There you go.
It's not theft. It's not theft. It's either tactical acquirement or it's reappropriation.
Right.
So we've taught our military service members to lie about how they get things or how things come to be. We've taught service members how to lie when you get back from deployment and they say, everything's fine. I haven't thought about choking my wife in a couple of days. I haven't thought about, you know, ending my life.
Right.
You know, it comes down to a fact that it's not a transition problem that we have. It's not a mental health crisis that we have. It's a quality of life issue that we have. Because, you know, as my, you know, I was a pastoral counselor for several years. I was a chaplain at a hospital. And even in my own personal experience, I've come to realize that the point when you say, I'm going to end my life, it's already too late. Because if you're dedicated to end your life, you know, there's nothing anybody can do at that moment that is going to change your mind. If you are dedicated to killing yourself, it will happen.
Right.
And there's not anything anybody can do. I think what the problem is what has prospered in that seed between the transition from the military to now, to that point. You know, the seed was probably planted when there was a trauma or when there was a loss of a job or a relationship. When you come back from deployment and your house is empty and your wife or kids are gone, that seed has already been planted. It is what is watering that plant. What is nurturing that seed to grow to the point where suicide and ending your life is the only option?
Well, one thing, this is Carol again.
That was a little bit of a rant. I do apologize. That happens on the show.
No, one thing that I want to add to that is, you know, TM Veterans, we have a radio show also. And, you know, we basically have guest speakers from different companies. And, of course, we don't talk generally about this, which I'm very appreciative of being part of this. But we had Piper, who is a nonprofit organization founder, and it's called Healing for Heroes. And, you know, it was funny because she talked about, and I say funny, that's probably a bad word to say, but it was so interesting that we're talking about, you know, the thinking about suicide, thinking about different things. And that's one reason that she started the Healing for Heroes. And what it is it's basically training of service animals for, you know, veterans with PTSD or traumatic brain injury or, you know, ESAs or, you know, the list goes on and on. But Piper, her organization, does a great job. And, you know, anybody that's listening can go to TM Veterans, .com and go to our TM Veterans Radio, pull down, and you'll see the Healing for Heroes and listen to what Piper says. And it's a lot of what we're talking about. But one thing I definitely want to say before anybody starts going again, but Orlando, you are you're an inspiration because you never gave up, and you definitely said some things that, you know, you wanted to give up, but you kept fighting, and that's definitely an inspiration. So you know, that's thank you for doing that. That's pretty awesome.
Hey, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah.
And,
I mean, whatever,
and
I, whatever, you know, I look at it like this. Whatever I could go ahead and do to help people, because that's what I've done pretty much all my life is help people, even though I've been self-destructive myself. But I'll help people. I'll go out there and go out of my way, and if it comes down to giving the shirt off my back, yeah, I'll be pissed off later because I gave up my shirt, but at least somebody's using it. You know, I helped somebody out. You know, but, you know, it's so, for me, I came up with the whole argument to myself, how is it that I can help so many people, but I don't know how to help myself? And I found that there's a lot of veterans that are like that. They, you know, they're like, okay, I don't know how to help me. I need somebody to hold my hand. And there's a lot of people out there that are not willing to hold, you know, a veteran's hand. They're like, well, you went out there, you did it, you served this country. Why should I have to hold your hand to go ahead and, you know, get a job or see a doctor or, you know, whatever the case may be? Maybe because we just don't know how to do it. You know, we've been so conditioned into being the fighters that we're supposed to be and go out there and get things done that how do we get things done for ourselves? How do we fix things that have taken place in our lives?
You know, it's absolutely awesome that you mentioned that. It's absolutely, like, I'm sorry to interject, but, you know, it's absolutely awesome that you mentioned that because I was at the VA the other day. Now, anybody that knows me knows I'll be willing to give the shirt off my back as long as it helps somebody. And I go out and I give my 110%. And people even at my post say, Alex, I know you want to take this on. That's awesome, but we're already overwhelming you. And I sometimes need people to tell me, hey, man, take a break. We got this. And my social worker at the VA the other day, I go in and he's asking, so what's going on in your life? And I'm telling him everything that I'm doing with AmVets, how I'm helping other people. And he's like, that's great. I'm glad you found a purpose, but what are you doing for you? And I couldn't think of a single thing that I'm doing for me. Because I'd keep coming back, well, I'm helping this vet, I'm helping that vet, and it's giving me a purpose again. But as I thought about it, I'm like, wow, he's really striking a chord with me because I can't come up with any single thing that I do for myself that is solely for myself. And I think that, you know, when you have veterans in our position, like myself, Orlando, Antoine, you have, you know, Vanessa, you have yourself, Carol. I think that's one of the pitfalls that you'll see a lot of veterans fall into. Because in the military, we're taught to be caretakers. We're fighting overseas to protect people who are less fortunate and can't defend themselves. Or we're defending the people on the home front from experiencing the traumas that we experience overseas. And then we get back and we help other veterans. And the question that always keeps coming back is, what are you doing for you? And I was at a loss for words. And I'm sure, Orlando, that's something that's been asked of you a couple of times.
I want to add one thing to that, Alex.
Go ahead,
you know,
Carol.
Even when... You know, when I went to the E5 board, I still remember it. You know, one of the things in the Army, the NCO creed is, no one is more professional than I. I am a leader of soldiers. We were trained right then to put our soldiers ahead of ourselves. So that goes hand in hand to what you're saying. And, you know, and I really had a smile on my face when you said that because I just sat there and asked myself, you know, what have I done? And honestly, last Saturday, I went out and set a deer blind. It's bow season. And, you know, I just sat there and looked at nature. And it was something that I did for myself. And I don't get to do that a lot because, you know, my focus is I want to help the veterans. And we're sitting here and we're talking about, you know, I don't call them problems. I call them opportunities. But, you know, one of the solutions is that, and I'm a firm believer in this, we just need to figure this out, and, you know, I think we got some awesome brain power on this show, is that, you know, the sponsorship. And if you look at a organization like AmVets, you know, AmVets is everywhere. And I'm hard-pressed to say that there are not AmVet members all over the United States that would not help out with sponsorships. And I'm not talking about necessarily, you know, what school's the best and, you know, what area is to look at, but just somebody to talk to.
Exactly.
You know, if I sit there and I listen to what Orlando's doing, you know, Orlando, and you quote me if I'm wrong when I say this, but a lot of times you didn't have anybody to talk to that could really relate to what you're doing. And I think that that is something that is needed, because I personally think that, you know, if you're getting out of the military right now, some of them, it's there's the door, bye, see ya. And they're not getting the acclimation back to the civilian world, and they don't know what to do. And they don't have that mentorship. They don't have that, you know, calling somebody that has either fallen down and gotten back up or made the same, you know, judgment call or something like that. But, you know, that is one thing that I know, I don't think we, you know, and I don't say we don't take it to the limit that we should after this conversation, because I see a lot of improvements that TM veterans can do just by talking about this mentorship, because you're focused on, you know, again, what do you want to be when you grow up? What is your background? You know, what part of the country do you want to live in? You know, there's so many things that we're talking about with transition, but there's so many other issues and opportunities that go up to the final result of, you know, finding that great position and, you know, putting a roof over the head, clothes on the back, food on the table, and things like that. So I definitely wanted to throw that in there, Alex. So I apologize for interrupting.
Hey, no, don't apologize, Carol. I mean, I'm glad you said that, because if Sherman, if you're still online on the air, you know, Sherman posted earlier today the Marine Corps drill instructor creed. The first line of that is, "These recruits are entrusted to my care." It's not just an Army issue. It's all throughout the branches of service. You're always taught and ingrained into you that those who are less fortunate or less knowledgeable or in a less, you know, less of a rank, less experience, it's your job to be your brother's keeper and to take care of them. You know, and I'm sure that you could speak to that as well, Sherman, with, you know, putting others first.
Well, just I want to say one thing real quick, Sherman. I don't mean to cut you off, but, you know, when I look at Orlando and you talked about being in the military in the 80s, you paved the way for me because I served in the 90s. Okay, Alex, yeah. I think you served in the 2000s. Okay, I hope I paved the way for you. And, you know, you look at our brothers and sisters that, you know, again, that served in, you know, World War II or Vietnam or, you know, whatever conflict, they paved the way for us. We paved the way for them. And, you know, the soldiers that are in now, they are training and, you know, providing that leadership for the soldiers of tomorrow. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, Orlando paved the way for me. We never knew each other. You know, we never served with each other. But his part of his leadership, when he served, it went over to us. And then, of course, ours went over to you, Alex. And, you know, it's that generation that just keeps rolling and, you know, keeps going. So, again, that's a great thing to – a great way, I feel, to really look at something like that, because, you know, Orlando made the sacrifice. I made the sacrifice. You know, Alex made the sacrifice. All of us knew that we weren't signing up for basket weaving 101. You know, we knew what we were doing. So, right.
I would have liked to sign up for basket weaving 101. I mean, I think that would have done a lot for my stress.
Yeah, or that drill sergeant, or not the drill sergeant, but the recruiter really got us. But, you know, we knew what we were doing. So we knew that we were going to go hang out with Uncle Sam, and, you know, we were going to defend our country, and, you know, we were prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice. And we had brothers and sisters that have done that, and we need to, you know, always remember them. And, you know, I do every single day. You know, Josh Byers, second lieutenant, we never even called him lieutenant. We never called him sir. He just got out of Ranger school, and we're just thinking, here we go. And he was by far the best. And, you know, he gave the ultimate sacrifice in Iraq. And, you know, Ranger Byers is just, that's the man.
And that's definitely true because people have, you know, I can't tell you how many times when I tell people what the injuries I suffered and sustained, they say, I'm so sorry to hear that. The fact of the matter is, come on, I joined during a time of war in a combat arms MOS. It's not like I expected to do 20 years without anything happening. Now, that's an unrealistic expectation. You know, we are all aware of the sacrifices. Yeah, going back, you know, Sherman, you were beginning to speak before Carol came on.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to the conversation, and there's so much to unpack there. I often wonder if people don't just throw up their hands and they say this is too hard to deal with. I think back over my 15-year experience after I left the Marine Corps and how many people I've had to mentor. And there's one thing that if you believe it, you know, you almost make it manifest. No matter what problems you encounter with a particular veteran, there is somebody that went through the same problem and came out of it. I call it being in the hole, where that veteran is stuck in this hole, and there's an individual who's jumped into that hole and has gotten out of it before. But in my experience, it was having a serious spinal cord injury, and I couldn't imagine as a 29-year-old Marine officer what my life was going to look like until a retired Marine with the very same injury, although 18 years prior to mine, came into the room and began to explain to me what it's like to live with the injury, what it's like to still be a Marine with that injury and how it's a change in your life, but it's not impossible. And I had to see that visual representation of myself. I think that maybe homeless veterans may be a bit different because I think so many people bypass those veterans as if they don't count anymore. They're not as anxious to jump in and help. I hope that that's not always the case, but in my experience, it's really tough because people won't give folks a chance who have really fallen hard. And I've seen this a lot, and it spans generations of veterans. And if you stop and talk to a veteran who's been homeless, you find out that there's a story behind it. I've been briefly homeless. I returned from overseas, and I had a pretty bad divorce situation. Where I was supposed to have a home, and I know what it feels like. A lot of background noise.
Right.
Okay. But I know what it feels like to not have an address. I was still in the Marine Corps active duty, but I was just back from deployment, and I didn't know I was separated from my spouse until I got back. So I took my sea bag and I went on base and slept in the laundry room of a barrack. So I never forgot, and it's like you can't ever forget the heart, and that's a situation where it seems like there's no good answer. We're talking about ways that we have to appreciate what the previous generation did for us. We also have to pay it forward. I use the sentiment, we don't inherit what veterans or the service members before us gave us. We are borrowing the future military. We are borrowing future veterans. We are borrowing the culture and what will be in place at that time. And we're making the environment ripe for their success. You know, the past veterans, they've lived it. They've done what they did, but we're really investing forward into, 10 years from now, when all these veterans that are living with the consequences of burn pits, they're going to be the new Agent Orange or the Gulf War. What have we done to make our government more accountable? Starting with veterans who were, Agent Orange exposure veterans, but now we have the Blue Water Navy veterans. You know, we still deal with Gulf War. This is going to be tough in a couple of decades when these veterans are older, and they've got problems that are clearly there, but the government isn't inclined to admit it until you beat them up. That's why we do what we do in D.C. Legislatively.
Speaking of that, Sherman, I'd like to take a moment as a veteran who uses the VA as his primary source of health care. I'd like to take a moment to thank you on behalf of all the veterans who use the VA for your efforts and what you have done with the recent signing of the new VA budget and all of the activities you and those of us in AMVETS and those who are in AMVETS have done to put the pressure on this current administration to signing the largest budget the VA has ever seen.
Well, that was definitely a big victory for a lot of us who were champions of of making sure the veterans, the VA budget was adequate. The next step, though, is making sure that the agency spends the money the correct way and puts the right priorities in place. The VA has never been good about being efficient, and that's just an honest assessment after doing this for close to 16 years and watching this happen. It's not that they never had enough money. It was just the fact that it was wasted in many ways. So we hope that with this big budget, this historic budget, is accompanied by a better, more efficient process of spending the money in the right areas, and we'll watch that closely. That was a big victory, but we got a lot of work to do. I mean, we still have Blue Water Navy veterans who are suffering. We still have women veterans who are not getting the resources that they need and deserve and have earned. And this has implications for the future military. Well, right now, those who were born after 9/11 are turning 17. That's recruitment age. They're watching a lifetime, a literal lifetime of a country at war. And on the other side of that, how are veterans being treated? Do they really want to be? And that's probably why the 30% of graduating students who are eligible, of that 30%, a good number don't join. The 70% aren't eligible for one reason or another. But that remaining 30%, they're not joining in the numbers that the Army and the other services need to replenish the military. And that's why you have so many soldiers, and you're hearing about some of these soldiers who are 8th, 9th deployment getting killed in combat, which is always a shame. It's like I use the term, they're playing Russian roulette because they're having to go back. They've survived 7, 8 deployments, and they're getting killed on a knife. That should never happen in a country where there's an all-volunteer force and a legacy of patriotism and joining. It's not happening. There's something changing, and it's going to hurt us in the long run if we don't figure out a way to fix the visuals, the optics around veterans, around homelessness, around suicide. There was a new report.
Around quality of life.
That's all those are factors. But the new suicide report that the VA published, it was very disturbing because it revealed a new trend that wasn't there before. The post-9/11 generation, males of that generation, are killing themselves at a faster rate than any other demographic in the veteran population. That's new. This is 2016 data, mind you. And I've criticized that. I've said it needs to be more relevant and more relevant to today, not 2 years old. But that was a disturbing trend. And also women veterans, they're also killing themselves at a rate that is higher than non-veteran women, at a rate of 1.8 times greater than their peers who didn't join the military. What does that tell you if you're a young person who's looking to do something with his or her life after high school? You know, that's not good advertising. That's not a good recruitment tool if you're having this happen. So there has to be this sort of society-wide effort, not just those of us who are deep in the trenches, but we have to bring society in because it is a United States problem. It's not a veteran or a VA problem. It's a United States of America problem if we don't fix this. So I'm looking at going outside of our usual circles of communication, pushing this message to groups and companies and parts of society that never see this kind of problem, and hoping that something resonates so that we can, you know, mount a more collective effort to fix what's going on.
And as we saw
to,
in
Alex,
really, really quick, Carol,
that please.
Really, really
one,
quick.
One
I'm gonna.
You said. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well,
okay.
I was going to say what we saw at our national convention, too. It's not just people within our country that are looking to how we solve this problem. We had a delegation from the from the Republic of China in Taiwan. People from their administrations are coming to AMVETS, to the U.S., and looking at how we treat our veterans. So if we don't get this right, it's not just our veterans who are affected. It's the veterans of other nations who are looking to us for solutions who are affected. Go ahead, Carol.
Well, one thing I was going to say, and that's a great point, is, you know, there's a lot of leadership, and again, doesn't matter what branch, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, everything that is getting out of the military. And I actually read an article, I think it came out a couple of weeks ago, that the Army has missed their recruiting number by 70,000 this year. So, I mean, just think about that, and that probably just opened up another can of worms as far as, you know, when you have and you don't have the number, to replenish that number, I should say, you know, you're creating a problem coming down the road. And
exactly.
The number was 70,000 as the Army has missed recruiting for this year. So, you know, that's probably another can of worms for another day. To,
well,
you know, it goes in the line to what Sherman says.
If you've listened to this show, usually that's exactly what happens. We open up cans of worms as we get to the final 11th hour, which we're coming close to. We have 15 minutes left to our show, but we just opened up another can of worms. Perry, are you thinking what I'm thinking, brother?
Well, if I were to agree to that, some might lock me up, so I'm not going to agree to that statement. But I will. but I will, because really, I really don't know what you really could be thinking. So, with all due respect and love, my brother, let me just tell you what I'm thinking. Today is a gift. Okay? Yesterday is history, and tomorrow is a mystery. So I don't know what tomorrow holds, but I know who holds tomorrow. And if we have any opportunity to continue to encourage veterans through this show, no matter what the topic might be, no matter what the discussion might be, I'm in. If you think you can get a guest to come on to talk about something, I'm all about it. You know what I mean? You guys are actually the ones who set these topics, not me. It's kind of funny. If you go back and if you to watch some of the or listen to the older shows, a conversation will take place just like we're having now. And all of a sudden, oh, someone says, well, we've got 15 minutes left and we have another 2 hours to talk about it. So then it turns into another show. But why don't you go ahead and share, Alex, what you're thinking. And then if it has some sort of sanity attached to it, I will be more than happy to run along with you with it.
Well, Perry.
I really don't know what he's going to say. I don't know. I mean, really.
I'm thinking we need part two of Transitioning Veterans next week on AmVets Radio.
Brother, I knew it was that simple. I was just trying to make everybody laugh because, again, we have a situation where there are people listening right now who are being affected by this show, not just us, okay? Because, again, mm-hmm. we're going to take this information and we're going to pass this on. Because that's just what we do, you know. I don't think any of us who've ever been on AmVets Radio hangs up from AmVets Radio and goes, wow, I didn't learn anything. No, what ends up happening is well, usually Antoine
we end up
will
calling
write this
each other.
Brilliant, Antoine will write this brilliant post about what took place on AmVets Radio that I could never, ever write. And it always makes us look so good. And so, you know, again, this is a team. And, you know, as we continue on with these kind of discussions, as God continues to provide finances to keep this show running, we will continue there. But, I have no if you guys think that there's still more to talk about, we'll talk about it.
I think that we and the veterans who are listening to this show and our listeners could absolutely benefit from a Transitioning Veterans Part 2 because we've talked about so many things on our show today that have opened up a can of worms.
Yeah, I know about the website.
Like even Sheila needs to be a part of this, right, Antoine? Because she could really bring a lot to this conversation.
Hey, Perry, how you doing?
Yes. Yes.
Well,
I'm having a hard time hearing you. Do you have me on speaker?
I know. Can you hear me?
It's doubling. It's doubling or even tripling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Here, hold on.
Reverb on it.
Let me call back.
You know,
although
but we are coming down
there,
to
Perry,
the...
But, you know, this is Carol, and you know,
hey,
I think you could actually have.
Yep, go ahead. Go ahead,
three,
brother.
3, 4, and 5.
Go ahead, Antoine.
Can you hear me now? Oh, okay. Yeah, so, Perry, I appreciate it. You know, my way I came out of service was a little unique myself, and, you know, I always didn't look at my personal circumstances. I always looked to help other people. So I think that's kind of how Post 12 and what we do here in D.C. kind of, you know, came about, because we forego our own circumstances to help other people, you know, gather their circumstances. And then through that process, that helps us be a better person. And I think that's how we met, how our energies kind of connected. And, you know, going to the convention, I think that's how we all kind of came together. And it's something that I'm glad to make us look good. You know, we all look good as best. So that's something that I cherish. So thank you for that.
What do you think about Sheila Scarborough joining us again next week?
Oh, well, Sheila, that's my girl.
She'd be great at this. She, and why we didn't include her this week, I don't know. Shame on me.
I'm not going to tell her, though. Yeah, I think during, like, you know, the gaps between the broadcasts, she said, let me know when you guys are going to be back on. So, you know, we can get her back on schedule. That's not a problem.
Reach out to her next Tuesday. And that,
well,
that
Antoine
goes
mentioned
along for
his
anybody
girl.
On this show. Huh?
Well, Antoine mentioned his girl. I can't – I'd be, you know, remiss if I didn't mention my girl, Vanessa Dillon, who her daughter, Meg, as Peter Griffin usually said, shut up, Meg. Well, we're going to let Meg talk. I hear that Meg has an announcement to make regarding the Junior Amfets up there in Indiana. Vanessa, are you there, sweetheart?
I'm here. We better go get her because she left the room.
Meg.
Yeah.
And also, Rose, the suicide prevention. You know,
now, Meg has never heard the show before, right, Vanessa?
She hasn't listened to the whole thing.
She sent it through Messenger. She texted me and sent me an email.
Never mind.
Hey, Anton.
Wait. Go ahead, Vanessa. What were you saying?
She's never sat and listened to the whole program live. She has listened, you know, like to the archives and parts of the show. She sat with
me. Well, this is
going to
be her first time. This is going to be her first time on the show, Vanessa. Why don't you introduce Megan for us?
Hey, Megan. This might be a little embarrassing for her. Yep, surprise. Ambet's radio style. Megan, Alex and Perry said you have a public service announcement.
Oh.
Yeah.
No.
Go ahead. Tell everybody.
Me.
Oh, come on now, Meg. Come on. Don't be shy.
Come on.
Here. You just tell them right there what you told me.
No.
Just put her on speaker. Put her on speaker. We can hear her.
She is.
Hey, Meg.
She's embarrassed. The program will be over by then.
Well, if you want, if you want to, why don't you make it for her, and the next time
she
can make it on her own.
So what she had told me is that she wanted to make a public service announcement that she loves all veterans and she's here for them. And the same goes for all the junior AMVETs at AMVETs Post 23 in Indiana.
Wonderful. I even like the comment you told me she said about the radio. I even like the comment you said she said about AMVETs Radio and that no one's arguing.
Right. That it's like listening to a debate on TV, but without all the arguing.
What a concept.
I know,
hey,
right, Perry?
But
hey,
now
Sherman?
We've embarrassed her real good.
I'm here.
Hey, what a concept, huh, Sherman? An actual conversation without arguing and fighting?
You won't find her in D.C. She must not be anywhere near Washington, D.C.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not allowed out here. Mobility is allowed out here.
I'm going to be honest. I live inside
radio,
a beltway. I live inside that beltway. It's true.
You know what to expect.
I will say we're thankful for our junior AMVETs. That's the future that I'm talking about. That's the hope for this country. So we need to continue to invest in them. Make them leaders.
Absolutely.
Amen, brother.
Hey, Carol,
AMVETs
are
Post 45 is actually going to...
Yes.
I just want to quickly bring up one small topic, which we've actually discussed before. I wanted to get your thoughts on this, or as far as advice is concerned, but when it comes to veteran suicide, which is obviously it's a big issue here in the U.S., and we've had this conversation multiple times, but when it comes from transitioning from military life to civilian life, how is that, what has been your experience so far with those that you've dealt with who were suicidal, but after dealing with whatever advice you might have given them? I mean, share some of that experience, because, again, you have dealt with veterans directly on this.
Well, I would say that one of the most important things is really talking to veterans and listening. Whenever you're speaking, I've always been taught that whenever you're talking, you're saying something you already know. Whenever you're listening, you might learn something that you don't. And so when a veteran, is thinking about something like, you know, suicide, that's very heart-wrenching to me. So, there's so many great organizations out there that have 24/7, phone lines open. Basically, me personally, I mean, you need somebody to talk to, call me. Let's talk and let's just, there's just really, really listening to what their issues are and understanding them, because, again, whether it's Sherman, whether it's Orlando, Antoine, Vanessa, I think I've named everybody on the program, we all played in the same mud. It was just at different times. And so really understanding, the obstacles, and again, I hate the word failure. I mean, it really is not my vocabulary, but, I always call it an opportunity, but understanding the opportunity of what they're doing. And when you're transitioning, a lot of people will, it's hard, and it's getting back into that civilian mode. And I will never, ever forget, and I'll go ahead and say this real quick, but, my first job was a warehouse supervisor. And I'll never forget, they said, hey, we're going to have a dog and pony show. And so I told the workers, the team, I said, hey, we need to sweep, these aisles. We need to do this. And they were like, okay, we're going on break. And I'm like, okay, let's try this again. What part of let's sweep aisles 1 through 3 do y'all guys not understand? And we're going to do it right now. And, of course, I had to go see the HR manager and everything else. So, we're tuned a little bit different. And so it's really understanding that transition from military to civilian. But one thing I want to say before
let me have a thought, Gerald, because we're gonna run out of time, and I had a thought that I wanted to convey before we do. Specific to veteran suicide. I compare veteran suicide to carbon monoxide poisoning. You don't see it; it sneaks up on you, unless you have an alarm, unless you have something that warns you of its insidious presence. And there are two things that I ask everybody to look for in a veteran who might be in crisis. One is a sense of burdensomeness, meaning that veteran feels like a burden, whether that veteran was incarcerated, homeless, broke monetarily. So a sense of burdensomeness is one big red flag to look for. The second one is a lack of belongingness, not belonging to something, feeling isolated from what that veteran was comfortable with or was familiar with. So if you see those two signs, and it's easy to see them, you talk to them like you said, but those are two signals. Those are the canaries in the mine. Across a lot of cases where a veteran completed the suicide, is that sense of being a burden to a family and a lack of a detachment, a lack of belongingness, something that the veteran once had, and that could happen because of a divorce. Transition all kinds of ways, but I encourage our listeners to really get good at spotting those two signs.
Great information. Great information, and I couldn't say it any better. And Perry, I definitely want to say, Vanessa, Antoine, Sherman, Orlando, and if I missed anybody else that's been in the conversation, I apologize. But thank you for each of y'all's sacrifices. And Orlando, I definitely want to say that you're an inspiration, because you've been knocked down several times and you got back up, and that's part of what they taught us in the military as a veteran. We've got that title as a veteran, and you're an inspiration, so I just want to say thank you.
And you're more than welcome. Look forward to speaking to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to TM Veterans Radio. Tonight's show was really, really good. Part two from last night's AMVETS radio discussion, and you know, concerning transitioning veterans, and like I said, it opened up a lot of doors that needed to be opened. We talked about sponsorship, and you know, I know that's one thing in the military. If you're going from post to post, that's one thing that you basically will get a sponsor. I'm not sure that all posts do that. I think they do, but who's the sponsor when you get out? Who can you talk to? I look back when I got out. I'll never forget. I was actually a warehouse manager, and they said that we're going to have a dog and pony show, and I went to tell the team, hey, we got to sweep the aisles, and they said we're going on break, and it was like, all right, what part of sweep did we not understand? And the moral of the story is that, you know, in the military, you know, that there's, you can take your break later, you know, if you had to do something, you know, we had a job to do, we had to focus on it. So, you know, it was definitely a transition to civilian world as far as, you know, just different rules, you know, SOPs, procedures, things like that. So, you know, it's definitely a challenge. Just can't say it enough. So, you know, take the time to read, you know, our facts sheet, our frequently asked questions on TM Veterans, that great, great information. And then again, our company Seeking Veterans. That is just an absolutely, you know, fantastic page, has great companies. You know, one thing that we do that's very different, said this before, is that, you know, we try to get the companies on so you can hear the enthusiasm, you can hear the drive, you can hear why they want to hire veterans. You can look at a job request or form, whatever you want to call it, and you can see what the requirements are, you know, the education, things like that. And it sounds neat, but when you hear the management, the senior leadership, they really talk about, you know, basically different options, their benefits package, what they're looking for. You know, it goes above and beyond just reading a piece of paper. So that's one thing that we try to do on TM Veterans Radio. We are broadcasted worldwide for our military members, you know, our veterans and the communities. And, you know, our topics are related to veterans who are serving, you know, our military and, you know, transitioning from the military, you know, obstacles faced, company management, what companies look for, you know, resume advice, you know, and there's just so many other topics that veterans are faced with that, are day-to-day. And, you know, I'll speak for myself. You know, when I exited the military, you know, it was a tough task. And, you know, Alex touched base on that tonight, which, you know, you're hearing from another person also. So, you know, next week we are definitely going to have part three of this, which is, a lot of takeaways, you know, the sponsorship, the suicide. I know that is going to be another topic basically for next week's show. So we look forward to having y'all join us next week. It's on Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And, you know, again, thank you very much for listening to TM Veterans Radio. Definitely visit our website, tmveterans.com. Everybody have a safe week, and we will talk to everybody on next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.